Welcome to the 41st episode of Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Brandon Scalia. Onc Live On Air is a podcast from Onc Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onc Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. Onc Live is also home to the State of the Science Summits. These summits, which take place throughout the United States, are dedicated to the latest research in various therapeutic areas. That brings us to today's episode. We recently traveled to Washington, D.C. for a State of the Science Summit on gastrointestinal malignancies. During the meeting, the faculty spoke to the clinically diverse and steadily expanding therapeutic armamentariums for patients with GI malignancies. Prior to the start of the summit, we sat down with Chair John L. Marshall, M.D., who explained the foresight required in the treatment of patients with newly diagnosed metastatic colorectal cancer. Marshall is chief within the Division of Hematology Oncology at MedStar Georgetown University Hospital and director of the Otto J. Roush Center for the Cure of GI Cancer at Georgetown Lombardi Comprehensive Cancer Center.
Big picture of frontline metastatic colon cancer is molecular profiling is critical. You need to know that right from the beginning. You have to know MSI, you have to know RAS, you have to know BRAF, HER2, NTRK, you just need a lot. So most folks are doing broad molecular profiling. I also tried to make the major point around left versus right. So right-sided colon cancer, EGFR therapies don't seem to work as well there. So in left-sided colon cancers, that's really where it matters to know all of that molecular testing. And if your patient is in that left-sided RAS wild type, BRAF wild type, the retrospective data looking at EGFR therapy in that 20% of the population suggests there may be a benefit to using those drugs in that space. Rest of the patients probably don't matter. You can give everybody fulfoxivastatin, but in that group, you need to think second about EGFR therapy. Every patient with colon cancer, regardless of stage, you have to know their MSI status. Most of us test that using immunohistochemistry first, but you can do this with next-gen testing. Tumor mutational burden helps confirm that. But you need that signal in colon cancer for immunotherapy to even be in play. When you first meet a patient with metastatic colon cancer, you're thinking, okay, am I going to cure the patient or not? What's the role of chemotherapy? And for the most part, most of the patients you're not going to cure. Surgery is not going to be an option. And so in essence, you've got a long game to play. And the way I like to think of it is a chess game. And I think a lot of docs tend to be heavy-handed with their colon cancer chemotherapy. And so yeah, some patients' cancer requires being more aggressive, keeping more intensive therapy going or it'll progress. But I would say the vast majority of colon cancer patients, after some initial induction therapy, you can back off. You can use maintenance therapy. You can reduce the intensity of treatment. And so it shifts from not how much chemo you can give, but honestly how little chemo you can give and still control the cancer. Remember the fundamental principle that you're not going to cure them with chemotherapy. You're controlling their disease. So don't be too heavy-handed. Don't go so far as to create bad toxicities that are never going to go away. Use the medicines back off. Use surgery, use liver-directed therapy, use all the tools that you have, radiation, to manage those patients as best you can. But don't be too heavy-handed with your chemo. Many, many studies support this maintenance concept in chemotherapy. In fact, even if you start looking at the third line where you have the new oral agents, the studies are suggesting that if you use them earlier, that in fact they may have better play. They don't work at all if you save them until too late. They won't rescue a falling star. So what you need to do is play them earlier in the course of disease before you're recycling chemotherapy.
Next, we sat down with Yixing Zhang, BM, PhD, Associate Professor of Medicine and Director of GI Medical Oncology at the Marlene Stewart Greenbaum Cancer Center, the University of Maryland School of Medicine. In our interview, Zhang shed some light on the current and future landscape of relapsed refractory metastatic colorectal cancer.
In terms of the other molecular, small molecule inhibitors, and there are still roles in treating refractory colorectal cancer, such as the triple combination, the Beacon study, and has just came out and showed that in the BRAF mutant mutated colorectal cancer with the KRAS wild type, the triple combination cetuximab and MEK inhibitor and a BRAF inhibitor has shown a powerful response rate and the duration of the response. The other combination we could look at it is it's relatively older study. It's called a HERICO study, and it's a HER2-new positive colorectal cancer, and with the KRAS wild type again, and with the combo of the Herceptin and small molecule lapatinib, and then showed a very good response. So these are a very small proportion of the colorectal cancer that could benefit from combo of TKIs. That also alluded to the importance to do a precision medicine and genomic study in those colorectal cancer patients. However, there are large colorectal cancer patients who are KRAS mutated. We still do not have a good combo for those patients. Whether or not a triple combo is going to work on those patients, or we dependent on future good KRAS inhibitor, and that's in the future.
Segueing to gastric and GEJ carcinoma, Timothy L. Cannon, MD, a medical oncologist at Inova Medical Group, sat down with us to discuss several pivotal trials that have read out in the space, all of which bear important clinical implications to oncologists.
I focused on a few larger trials that have that I thought had the most significant clinical implications for oncologists in 2019. The first one I talked about was the TAGS trial, which was a phase 3 trial comparing the use of TAS-102, also known as trifluridine tipiracil, to placebo in third-line gastric cancer, and that trial showed a overall survival benefit of approximately 2 months, and the treatment was generally well tolerated other than some bone marrow suppression, and so I think that may be a reasonable option for third-line and gastric cancer patients. The second trial I talked about was KEYNOTE-61, which was a comparison of second-line pembrolizumab versus second-line paclitaxel in gastric and GE junction adenocarcinoma. And that in that trial, pembrolizumab did not show a survival or progression-free survival benefit compared to paclitaxel. It was a little better tolerated, but the overall survival was 8.1 months in the pembrolizumab arm and 7.8 in the paclitaxel arm. And so, I think what I've concluded from that is that while pembrolizumab is a reasonable second-line strategy, so is chemotherapy. And, of course, the trial failed to show that immunotherapy was superior in that setting. That trial, by the way, only included patients that were PD-L1 expressing. It's possible that the highest people that express PD-L1 at the highest levels may benefit a little more from pembrolizumab. But otherwise, pembrolizumab is not superior. The third trial I talked about was using ramucirumab in first-line therapy added to CAPOX, capecitabine and cisplatin. And the addition of ramucirumab didn't improve the progression-free survival very much. It was technically statistically significant, but was only 0.3 months, and is probably not clinically significant. And ramucirumab probably cannot be considered standard for first-line therapy.
Next, we sat down with Benjamin Weinberg, MD, Assistant Professor of Medicine in the Division of Hematology Oncology at Lombardi Comprehensive Cancer Center and Georgetown University, who spoke to frontline therapeutic options available for patients with metastatic pancreatic cancer, how to approach choosing between these regimens, and how to make them more tolerable for patients.
There are several viable treatment options for patients with metastatic pancreatic cancer. There's a couple standard frontline regimens. One is the FOLFIRINOX regimen of 5-fluorouracil, irinotecan, oxaliplatin, and leucovorin. And the other one is gemcitabine nab-paclitaxel. So those are our two basic standard frontline regimens. We now also have an approved second-line regimen of nanoliposomal irinotecan, leucovorin, and 5-fluorouracil for patients who have disease progression on gemcitabine. And those are essentially the five active drugs we have for this disease. It's very patient-dependent. So we think there are patients that we at least predict in our minds who can tolerate the FOLFIRINOX regimen because it is a little spicier, whereas the gemcitabine nab-paclitaxel regimen is usually, we think, much more tolerable. That said, both can be hard, for instance, on patients' blood counts, so it is possible to have low blood counts with both regimens. So that's often what we're working between. But we do think that, you know, for patients who don't have what we call as good of a performance status, if they're not up out walking around as much, if they're older, they tend to not do as well with FOLFIRINOX, especially if they have other medical problems. But that said, you know, it's often a discussion we have with the patient, and we try to at least have the patient be exposed to all five drugs at some point. So whether that's, you know, the three up front and then the other two later on, you know, those are always what's going on in the back of our minds. And, you know, in my practice, I often trim some of the doses a little bit because I think it makes it much more tolerable. And we often use things like white blood cell growth factor support to support people who have low blood counts on that regimen. So that's definitely something that we're always thinking about as well. And we do know that there are some people from a cancer standpoint that respond better to one versus the other. We tend to falsely think that FOLFIRINOX has a better response rate than gemcitabine nab-paclitaxel. But in essence, in both of the trials that led to their approval, they were just compared to single agent gemcitabine. They weren't compared head to head. The FOLFIRINOX regimen had a response rate in the low 30s, gemcitabine nab-paclitaxel in the low 20s. But again, slightly different patient populations, so never compared head to head. And I think going forward, we need better tests to figure out which patient should get a 5-FU-based regimen or a gemcitabine-based regimen.
Despite the activity of peptide receptor radionuclide therapy, somatostatin analogs remain the recommended frontline treatment for patients with advanced gastroenteropancreatic neuroendocrine tumors, after which sequencing becomes less clear, explained Ana Maria Cristina de Jesus Acosta, MD, Assistant Professor of Oncology at Johns Hopkins Medicine.
So the data is based on the CLARINET study. So originally, the somatostatin analogs have been used for many, many decades so far. And it has mostly been used for controlling the symptoms of hormone secretion in patients that have neuroendocrine tumors. Eventually, by the year 2009, it was published the PROMET study that demonstrated some anti-proliferative effect controlling progression-free survival in the patients that have neuroendocrine tumors, and subsequently another somatostatin analog, that is the lanreotide, that one had also a phase 3 clinical trials, which is the CLARINET study that I will be presenting today, and in that one it also showed that it improved progression-free survival in the patients that were treated with lanreotide versus the patients that were treated with placebo. So I think that that is a huge advance, because in many of these patients, if they have a lot of disease burden, we certainly want to control when they have progression so that we can delay when they have symptoms related to the neuroendocrine tumors itself.
Several positive trials in advanced hepatocellular carcinoma have led to an influx of available treatment options in a field that had become relatively stagnant, said Awu Ruth He, MD, PhD. In our interview, He, an associate professor of medicine at Georgetown Lombardi Comprehensive Cancer Center, discussed the newly crowded treatment landscape of HCC and highlighted next steps for research.
In the first-line setting, we have two TKIs, sorafenib and lenvatinib. Sorafenib was approved in 2007, supported by SHARP trial and Asian Pacific trial. Lenvatinib was just approved last year, supported by the REFLECT trial. In the second-line setting, we now have two TKI and two immune checkpoint inhibitors. So regorafenib, a TKI, was approved in 2017 in patients who have tolerated sorafenib and progressed on sorafenib, and supported by the RESOURCE trial. And cabozantinib was just FDA approved in January of 2019, is supported by the CELESTRA trial. We have the two IOs, immune checkpoint inhibitors. Nivolumab was FDA approved for its accelerated approval, pending confirmation of the clinical benefit described in a confirmatory study. And that was approved in 2017. And pembrolizumab was supported by clinical trial KEYNOTE-224. And was also approved based on durable response, pending sort of supporting data from a confirmatory study. So right now, the ramucirumab, the benefit of ramucirumab in patients with elevated alpha fetal protein over 400 and prior sorafenib treatment was tested in comparison with placebo in a study called REACH2 study. And the data has shown a survival benefit, and the study met primary endpoint. And this is the first study actually select patient based on a biomarker, in this case is alpha fetal protein. And the data currently is under review by FDA, and so we're watching for the approval, upcoming approval.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to the 41st episode of OncLive on Air. Check back on Wednesdays for new interviews from our State of the Science Summits. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. We have several upcoming State of the Science Summits for those interested in attending. If you'd like to hear more about the treatment landscape of breast cancer, consider registering for the May 21st State of the Science Summit in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. We will also be hosting a State of the Science Summit on June 5th in Seattle, Washington, which is focused on hematologic malignancies. To check out the list of upcoming meetings or to register, go to onclive.com/meetings/SOSS. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at @OncLive and @OncLiveSOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you like today's episode of OncLive on Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive on Air.